Holy Week in the Christian calendar is probably the Western canon's primary passion narrative. An older antiquity, however, honoured the death of Socrates in the same manner, while the Maccabean martyrdom, recorded for us in Greek and not in Hebrew, expressed a comparable Judaic mythology of witness. The Renaissance would enthusiastically rediscover Socrates' exemplary end, and the early Enlightenment of secular modernity rather preferred the Athenian saint to his poor Palestinian counterpart, promoting Plato's fourfold reflection on his master's death as a rival narrative to the fourfold crucifixion accounts in the New Testament. It might therefore be interesting to air an account of Socrates' death in the octave of the Christian Passion. And the one you're about to hear is, I think, the least well-known of the quartet. While the famous Apology and the Phaedo, which consider virtue and immortality, dovetail neatly enough with the later concerns of a profoundly Platonized Christian philosophy. The Crito, which I call Judgment, is curious in its modern insistence that we are the children of culture and not of nature, and that the individual is a community project instead of a personal initiative. Set in a prison cell, the little dialogue requires two actors, hypocrites in classical Greek. Although I've rejuvenated the middle-aged Crito by imagining him as a youngster, in order to mitigate his moral immaturity and furnish a vocal contrast. He's essentially a lovable buffoon. Plato, ever the star pupil, is forever sending up Socrates' more mediocre students. The exchange is low-key, close, and confidential. We should almost be eavesdropping, in hidden microphone style, on a conversation that largely lacks the theatricality of a formal tutorial. These pedagogues, after all, are in prison.
This is a strange time to visit, Crito. It's early still.
Early enough.
But already too late.
No. It's only first light. Almost first light. Daybreak. See through the bars.
I'm surprised the relevant authorities let you in.
I surprised the relevant authorities with a small token of thanks. They know me, I know them.
Knowledge is a great thing. How long are you here?
A while now.
Why didn't you wake me, instead of sitting there staring at the wall?
I've no idea. You were sleeping. Sleeping is a kind of sanity. Waking up can be the worst thing in the world. I'm wide awake now, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. Your stiff upper lip. Your sang-froid. I used to think it manly. I used to think it divine. But it's not even human.
Crito, at my age, even the end of the world wouldn't be the end of the world. You follow?
At a distance. Men much older than you tremble at the thought of death.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
Not.
Perhaps. Perhaps not, exactly. You still haven't told me why you're here. You were never a mourning man.
I am a man in mourning, Socrates. I am a man on a mission. I am a man with a message. Will you listen to me? Will you listen to us?
The death warrant, I suppose. It's arrived at last. My ship has reached its shore.
No, Master. Not yet. But it is coming. It's on course. It's close. It has the wind behind it and a strong current, too. Tomorrow becomes today. Today becomes too late. Don't you see? Can't you see?
I see that God's will is my serene shall be, Crito. But I do have a feeling.
You have a feeling? Well, your accusers have feelings too. Strong feelings. And your accusers' feelings are hurt. They are hemorrhaging black blood.
I have a feeling I won't die today or tomorrow, but the day after. On day three, you might say. On the third day. I had a dream, you see.
You had a dream?
Just on the cusp of consciousness. As you barged in. A pretty young thing. A virgin, naturally. In white vestments, of course. Informed me personally that I'd perish on a revised timetable. Now that must mean what it says. It's obvious, no? Besides, a fantasy is not always a fiction.
Listen to me. I love you. You are beloved.
Serenades are for the small hours, Crito. Not the sunrise, surely. That would be an obad.
I'm not trying to woo you. I'm trying to threaten. You cannot betray us by dying. If you do that, it will sentence us, your students, your circle of friends, to live in the long aftermath, in your appalling absence, with the social stigma of having survived you. The world and his wife will think that we fled, will think that we failed you, that we didn't dig deep enough in our pockets to stage your escape. It's an inconceivable notion, but the inconceivable breeds. No one's going to imagine that you wanted this place, this prison. No one will understand that you built this cell on your own, stone by stone. No one will see that you carried out a capital penalty on your own person, by yourself, for yourself.
No one. Who on earth is no one? No one is neither here nor there, neither this nor that. No one is nothing at all. In any event, what people think of us is none of our business. Thoughtless people think once, thinking people think twice, which is thoughtful of them.
Yeah, your own case proves the contrary. The truth isn't abstract and it isn't absolute. It is arithmetical, Socrates. It is all down to numbers. It is all up to the count. Numerous people wish you well. Innumerable people do not. Figure it out for yourself. The plural of dice is die.
Numbers are useful, I grant you that. But they don't make us literate, Crito. They don't make us witty, which would be nice, or wise, which would be even nicer. In fact, now that I think of it, they don't add up to very much at all.
They add up to a verdict. They pronounce a sentence. They amount to an execution.
My point precisely, thank you.
If you're afraid...
I am afraid. I'm afraid for you. You're in a fearful state, man.
All right. Have it your way. I'll play this game. We'll play the game together. We're in a classroom, not a cell. This is homework, not heart work. And you're afraid for us. Don't be. Don't bother.
Perhaps so. Perhaps not. Go on.
You're afraid of afterwards. Afraid of what will happen to us. The knock on the door at night, the dawn raid, the routine roundups, arrests, trials, indictments. Not to mention the confiscation of assets. In a word, eradication. That's what terrifies you. It shouldn't. We are, each and every one of us, prepared to be ruined for your sake, sir.
Yes. I must admit I was afraid of that.
Don't be. None of us cares about the cost. We'll bribe our way into bankruptcy if we have to. All our material possessions are at your disposal for your deliverance. People you never heard of are offering support. We have friends at court. We have friends in the court system.
If I were to save myself, I might find myself at a great loss, it seems to me. How would I pass the time? How would I honor it?
You can go anywhere. City or country. Any continent you care to mention. You're a man of the world.
I'm a man in the world. Is that the same thing?
And you're a father. A father of children. Of pupils who could never be peers. Of peers who could never be competitors. This fellowship you've offered us, it's more than friendship. It's family life. It's a community, dammit. A communion. What sort of father deserts his own flesh and blood? What sort of father disinherits his own descendants? And wouldn't that be utterly shameful and scandalous?
Scandalous and shameful, utterly.
But it's worse than desertion. Worse than disinheritance. Hear me clearly now. Because if you agree to your own execution by regarding a pardon or a reprieve as a more terrible penalty than the judicial sentence in store today or tomorrow, the sons whom you abandon, and I am one of them, I am your seed and breed, will be seen as weak-willed, womanish, a coterie of effeminates who blinked and bolted at the critical moment.
The critical moment. Judgment Day, Crito. You're well named.
Your death will be our mortification, too. Your extinction will extinguish us in our own lifetime. If we live on, we'll live on as ladies, as social lepers in a limbo. We'll be the deserters, you the deserted party. But your mysticism is at our expense. It's outrageous. The actual record will be upside down and inside out forever. Someone will write this down. Someone will turn a stubborn suicide into a patient saint and thereby criminally libel his guiltless disciples down through the ages.
Your argument is rational, more or less.
I had a good teacher. Once upon a time, I had the best teacher.
But anything can be rationalized. That's the beauty of the rational faculty, of course. And then again, we might well ask ourselves, is it reasonable to be rational? If so, is it always reasonable to be rational? Or is it only often reasonable to be rational? Come to that, is it only sometimes so? There's a conundrum for the both of us. Is it wrong to be right?
Is it right to be righteous? Righteousness, too, can be wrongdoing. Who taught me that?
I have to tell you, Crito, I'm enjoying this enormously. You're much brighter in the morning. It must be your metabolism.
I'm pleading with you for dear life.
My poor Crito, you have the zeal of the convert. All you need now is the conversion of the zealot.
I'm imploring you.
Logically, even lucidly, I might add. Perhaps I should be led by you. After all, you're not about to die. More crucially, you're not about to be put to death, which is death with a disagreeable difference. You can therefore afford to be entirely objective. Your faculties are intact. Your decision-making skills are, well, skillful and decisive, I don't doubt. In my case, of course, the prospect of annihilation probably clouds my judgment. I cling, you see, to the ludicrous idea that what was holy the day before yesterday will be holy the day after tomorrow, because holiness does not keep time. Indeed, its timing is terrible. Instead, it keeps eternity. It has eternity in its safekeeping, you might say. My head buzzes with such nonsense, thank God. It's all a blur, mind you. It's all beyond the beyond.
Everything that is before you, you can put behind you, here and now, with a word, a single word. The least whisper of a sign. You can still move on. You can still be free.
Now, my friend, I think you're beginning at long last to understand me.
I've never understood you, Master. If I did, I wouldn't be your pupil, I'd be your dialogue partner.
But you trust me?
I trust you.
God bless your innocence. You trust me in the same way that an athlete, say, trusts his trainer or a patient his physician.
In much that manner.
Their advice in matters of diet and discipline are probably worth considering.
Probably worth it, yes.
More so, do you suppose, than mere public opinion and the passing crowd?
It is altogether likely.
So one person's point of view may be sounder and subtler than a general mood, which is, as it were, all the rage around town.
Your question answers itself.
A sprinter who consults his coach is a sensible man. Likewise, a diseased individual who decides to attend a doctor is quite commonsensical.
Of course he is.
If we take such trouble over physical fitness and physical health and the solid quandaries of the mortal body, torn ligaments and tumors, should we trouble ourselves with our metaphysical and immortal counterparts? I mean interior well-being. In short, does the spirit matter?
The spirit matters more.
The spirit matters more. Upon my soul, Creto, you have a way with words. The human spirit is a material consideration after all. Well, goodness gracious me. I would never have thought it.
It is common knowledge in our circle.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. If indeed it is, and it may well be so, do we therefore resort to the knowledgeable multitudes for our moral advice and ethical guidance, or is it still the case that we should seek specific counsel from some learned person who has proven expertise in this area? Just as the gymnast will confer first and foremost with his personal trainer and not with some lackadaisical spectator. Mind you, it seems that we're looking now for a different kind of physical instructor, a different kind of physician altogether. We're on the lookout, so to speak, for a surgeon of the soul.
There are those amongst us who felt they had found one.
Any old butcher won't do, it goes without saying. Although any old butcher can cut and chop with the best of them, no, this sleight of hand is skilled work. A task for the operating theatre, not the abattoir. It's for the finger, not the fist. It's for the diplomat, not the mob.
The business of the mob is butchery. They are experts at it.
There are worse things than being torn apart by versatile experts.
Name one.
Being torn apart by versatile amateurs, Creto, or by taking your turn in the tearing.
How so?
If I tear myself away from the Athenians, I am tearing myself away from Athens also. I can't do the one without the other. If I abandon the citizens, I abandon the city. If I abandon the idiots, I abandon the ideals as well. It follows that if I tear myself away from Athens, I tear myself in two, in three, in 30, in 1,000 pieces. There's a word for that in the tragedies, but I can't think of it. Notwithstanding, I would be the shreds of a man who was once himself single and singular, one and the same, and has now become many disparate bits, none of which fit. I would be atomized. I would be anatomized. I would be anathema. All those grandiose Greek words. So the only question that remains is the very question of remaining itself. And that is best answered by busying my mind with the business of staying still and not straying. Not straying from the plain, let alone the beautiful truth. Staying still is, in its own odd style, the opposite of the mob. It may be the opposite of mobilization. It could even end in the civilized process of my being finally demobbed.
And disarmed.
And disarmed.
And disgraced.
Well, that too.
And dead.
So they tell me.
Because you can't survive. Because you won't survive. You're not willing to.
Survival isn't enough. It has too little vitality about it.
The law says...
Ah, the law. The rule of law. Or the law of the ruler. Or do you mean that obscure intersection of the two notions, which we might term, for argument's sake, the maintenance of law and order? What does the law say, Creto? Remind me, would you? I appear to disremember. I admit to a strong sense of what is lawful and what is not. Mere legality, on the other hand, perplexes me.
The law says that suicide is not a crime, because dishonor is worse than death. That much is self-evident to any good man.
Mm.
But it may still be a sin, Socrates. It may still be sinful. You have said so yourself in the past.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. Martyrdom, for that matter. Maybe bad manners, too. And self-sacrifice. An exercise of sheer pride. You could even argue that our bodies do not belong to us in the first place. That is the Orphic position. Pythagoras also, as I'm sure you're aware.
Who do they belong to, then?
They may belong to what they long for. They may belong to God, who imagined them so intently. But they must also belong here below, in time and space, to their own kind origins. They must belong to where they began, to the swaddling clothes of their culture. They belong to their parents, to a home place, to a place name, to a people. They belong to what breeds them and births them, to baby talk and mouth music, to the breast and bib of the world that has brought them into it, out of desperate, deaf-mute animal existence. There is nothing for the human being outside the human order, Crito. In spite of the system they teach in the schools, the first person plural always precedes the first person singular in any good grammar. The I emerges from the we, the self from society. A man without a city is a contradiction in terms. He is a dead body wherever he drifts. Stay upwind of him.
So speaks the man who professes to despise the many. So speaks the solitary thinker who gloatingly mocks the hoi polloi in their hearing. So speaks an academic snob.
So speaks the truth of things in the oldest of all testaments, which is common sense. Even if we decide to decorate it by calling it ancient tradition. You accuse me of abandoning my offspring. I would never do that. But by the same token, I cannot abandon the source and spring of my own selfhood, which is the state of Athens and the local Greek I speak, and the cultural traditions that embody me, the world where I live and move and have my being. Even if that immobility were to result, as it may, as it must do, Crito, in a biographically regrettable outcome. One may prune a branch for greater growth, naturally. That's good gardening sense. To amputate the root, however, would be a horticultural catastrophe for every part of the plant, every last little lacquered twig of it.
Socrates, the world in which you live and move and have your being is about to obliterate you by lethal injection. The toxins have been mixed. The poison is ready. It's a terrible, drawn-out death. With your enemies watching.
Pharmaceutical fears are for toddlers, Crito.
But the criminal injustice, the false charges, the forced confession.
Neither false nor forced. I freely confessed it. I have indeed broken the blasphemy laws as they exist, and am rightly reprimanded. I have gulled and beguiled a dozen youngsters into unscrupulous intellectual activity of an antisocial and subversive sort. I taught them how to think, you see. Meditation went to their head like a cup of claret wine, and hooligan behavior ensued. Dialectic will do that, alas, in the long run. My innocence, accordingly, does not absolve me. In fact, innocence can be culpable. Due process may not understand why, but judgment does, and I'm concerned with judgment now, not with case law or with criminal codes. It's the writing on these walls I want to read, not some tomcat's graffiti to the sweetheart he'd betray.
Athens without Socrates. It's a ghastly thought.
Not as ghastly as Socrates without Athens, and not as lethal, Crito. Even you must see that. Now it's broad daylight in this shadowland. Why do you think I refuse their offer of banishment on a guilty plea?
Because forced expulsion from the state is an insult as well as an injury. While the flight into exile is the act of a free man in charge of his own choices, a man who won't bargain with his dignity. That's why.
The writing on the wall says something else. Something else altogether.
There is no writing on the wall, Master. I see only the wall itself and the stricken geriatric who erected it. I see your hands and handiwork on a damp, dry stone wall. There's no trace of any other mason's mortar.
I think it may be saying, listen to me, child of the city state. Yes, you who like to brandish question marks like shepherd's crooks to snare your bleating flock of seminarians on the talkative walkabouts in the busiest precincts. Answer my mild interrogation one last time. Tell me this, then. Whose idea were you in the first place?
You will reply that it was Athens. Athens invented you.
By whose marriage rites were my parents wedded and bedded abundantly?
Those of Athens.
By the performance of the protocols of whose official cult was my birth registered and my childhood regulated?
Athens again.
In whose religious liturgies was I raised in the fullness of time to spiritual and social life?
Athens.
Who gave me my infant community? Who confirmed me on the brink of boyhood?
Athens.
And who taught the scholarship student in the arcades of the college, who trained him as a soldier in a volunteer militia, brought him into battle in the throes of terror, then home again in the thrill of thanksgiving and the fumes of incense?
None other.
Who, most of all, more than anything else, bestowed on this two-legged creature the miracles of sentence structure and the musical scale? Those octaves in our throat are not from nature, Crito. They are from the city, always from the city, from the centerpiece, which is the masterpiece, which is the metropolis. In 70 years, I've never swerved from that insight. Here is the honeycomb. I could have gone north to barbarian territory, tundra and glaciers. I could have gone south to city Jerusalem, sandstorms and deserts. God forgive me, I might have been a medicine man or a primitive instead of a citizen. And you talk about a lucky escape.
There are cities older than Athens. There are cities other than Athens.
Can you see me, Crito, pottering around some breeze block encampment, all alcohol and cholera, in a gale force wind, wrapped up in the self-importance of my scapegoat status, quite the demonized angel of liberal mythology? And all because I wanted to go on breathing in and breathing out for a few more months on the door saddle of my 9th decade?
God help me when all of this is written down. Because I meant well. I came as a savior. I leave as a scoundrel. You've sabotaged me, same as always. I should have known there's no one smarter than a victim. Victimhood, by God, is the cleverest dodge of the victimizer. Now I'm the culprit, not the casualty. I'm the cute fox, the fall guy, the false disciple.
No. You're my cherished dialogue partner, and you came at the critical moment to be my gritty interlocutor. Now you must be tired.
I'm tired out, truly.
I could do with a nap myself. It's early enough, and I'm still in the rich vicinity of that curious dream.
What dream?
The one I was having before I nodded off. The virgin in white vestments. Pretty young thing, with her word of warning and her talk of day 3. The dream I was having just before I fell fast asleep and dreamed that young man Crito, particular pet of mine from a previous life, shook me and woke me up. Or woke me up and shook me, I'm not certain which. That was a nice dream, too. The sequel. He was as real as if he were sitting there in front of me, staring at the wall. I was surprised they'd let him in. But anything is possible in a dream. He was never a morning person.
He should have the last word. The last word belongs, surely, to the condemned man.
Say no more.
Is that a yes or a no?
Let's just listen for the time being. Let's just listen in silence to the silence. It was always and everywhere my favorite wind instrument, the same silence. I have a fondness for the flute, of course, just as you favor the trumpet. I remember your burst lip that time. But the flute doesn't have quite the same range or repertoire as a dead acoustic, does it? Strictly between ourselves. Silence can even make my tinnitus tuneful. Did I ever tell you that?
Perhaps. Perhaps not. I don't remember.
I'm sorry, you were saying?
That doesn't matter.
No, feel free. Fire ahead. I'm all ears. All attention.
I've forgotten. You have me exhausted.
You have me all energized. It was something about the least word. The last word.
It makes no difference. I make no difference.
The condemned man, that was it. The condemned man has the last word, according to Crito. And that's fair enough, according to Socrates. A condemned man should have the end line, the epilogue. Certainly he should have the full stop. On the other hand? The desire to have the last word, my dear friend, is in itself a form of violence. And that would be unspeakable at this stage. We should be speechless. We should shut up.
No more big talk.
No more big talk. No more small talk. No more middling talk, for that matter. No more gossiping, undergraduate or otherwise. Which is to say, no more moral philosophy. We're done. We're out of here.
Not a syllable, so...
Not a sound, even. Mystery is many things, Crito, but it's never noisy. God knows the last word doesn't belong to either of us. I have almost learned in a lifetime that it doesn't belong to any of us. But of course, God knows that as well.